What is up, Pitcherless family? Welcome to another episode of Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford. As always, I am joined by senior analyst Scott Chu. We're talking hitters on Pitcherless. Scott, we've got real baseball to talk about this week, and I couldn't be more excited.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have that much of it, but we have some of it, and that is better than none of it. It's better than spring training, where all we can kind of do is say, like, oh, this doesn't matter. This matters. This matters. We don't know how much it matters yet, but it matters, definitely.
Yeah, teams are actually trying to win ball games. I know last week we talked about in spring training, the objective isn't always to win. But now it is, as of March 27th or whenever opening day was. I don't know. The days are all blur now. But we've got about 4 to 5 games from each team, about 10 to 20 plate appearances for each full-time player. Sample size is obviously still too small to really mean anything. But there's a lot of things that we can use as actionable observations.
Yeah, like, first of all, you have to act before you know, right? Like, that's going to be a thing all the time, all throughout the year, is you have to act before you're certain, because someone else is going to act before you could possibly be certain. If all you did was wait until you knew for sure that this dude, what he was doing was legit, you'd never get any players, right? It's okay to jump a little early. Just know what you're looking for and know what kind of risk you're taking, right? Like, don't cut a guy you took in the 10th round for a dude on waivers right now, simply because he's hot right now, right? Like, we don't want to make that kind of jump. I was talking to someone the other day and they were like, oh, so how do I know what level of player? Like, right now, the guys I took in the first 10 rounds, unless they are now out for many months, it's a big no, right? They are not leaving. They're not leaving the roster. Maybe they hit a bench, but that's about it. But if if you're talking about the last couple of guys you picked, those reserve guys, like, you know, maybe the last outfielder, you know, if you're in a points league, you probably don't have a lot of reserve outfielders. Maybe that last outfielder or two, they can go, right? Because that's, you're roughly sitting around the replacement level. That's okay, right? If you took like a second, your starting second baseman, but with like your last pick, yeah, that's fine. He can go. Right. You intended to swap in and swap out, and you can do that starting now. That's okay. If something looks interesting, go ahead. I mean, like, on draft day, part of the whole point of that exercise of taking your second baseman with like your last pick or the very last second baseman off the board was like, yeah, this guy and the next 10 guys, they all look the same to me. Right. So if one of them now looks interesting, go ahead and jump in. But leave those like big time guys, or even just like the first 10 rounds, a guy that you expected to be a stable starter, leave them alone.
Yeah, a great example of this in my points league. I may have jumped ship a little bit early, but I did take my third outfielder where I have no bench bats, and dropped him for Chase DeLauder. So, the only problem is that third outfielder was George Springer. So, like, that's where the replacement level is. That's where the replacement level is.
Yeah. In a shallow league, that may very well be true. To use some examples of guys that have come out to a slow start right now, that you probably drafted, like Josh Naylor, you're leaving that alone, right? You're leaving that plugged in. That was an earlier round pick. A closer one in a 12-team league is like Caleb Durbin, right? I'm not seeing anything about Caleb Durbin that's different than what any normal 4 or 5 game slump would look like. So you don't need to cut him. But he'd be on the borderline in like a standard 12-team league. In a 15-team league, no, he stays. His eligibility is too valuable. Cedric Mullins, definitely the type of guy. If you scoop that late in the draft, go ahead, let him go, right? Addison Barger, that's okay. You can let him go. You weren't counting on him like, oh, he's going to have to make it if this team's going to win, right? That's not really how that works. Now, on the other hand, guys like Wyatt Langford, Bo Bichette, you leave them alone, right? You just let them sit. It stinks that they're slumping, and that's fine, right? Leave it be. Ivan Herrera, Willie Adames, leave those guys. That's kind of where we're at right now. Whereas, like, again, a Kyle Manzardo, like, it's cool that he's playing. He definitely looks off right now. He struck out more than 50% of his plate appearances in the first 5 games he played. And he was probably, he's probably swimming around the replacement level in your league at first base in a 12 teamer. So that's okay. Go ahead. Let Kyle Manzardo go. If there's something on the wire that looks really interesting, but you're not, you don't have to make drastic moves, but you're also, I don't want you to take this concept that we're going to talk about this whole podcast, which is like, hey, don't overreact. Just understand overreacting means like first 10 round kind of guys, right? Top 100 overall hitter kind of guys. Leave them alone. But if they're like top one, you know, if they're between like 120 and 150 or in a standard 12 team league, that might be okay.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, George Springer was my final hitter drafted in that league. So it was one of those things where I stacked bats early and then I probably could have dropped one of my pitchers, but pitching in this league is so valuable and it's a 10 team, that's three outfield league. So points outfield is weird. Kind of a dime a dozen.
Points leagues are weird. They have different weights. It doesn't work quite like head to head. Pitchers tend to be a lot more valuable. You almost never carry bench bats in a points league or maybe one super utility guy until you find a streamer to replace him. So that's one of the hard things with points is I'll say, oh yeah, that's a bench bat. Well, in points, you just don't have those, right? Your bench basically is your last two to three outfielders or two outfielders like that. One or two outfielders, that's your bench.
It is indicative though that I feel the need to justify it because of just the league dynamic and things like that. In a normal situation, don't drop George Springer for Chase DeLauder. Yeah, like he's a prime example of what you're saying. Don't do.
Yes. Still in the circle of trust. Again, unless if you're in some 10 team, three outfield short bench situation, that's where you need to adjust what your replacement level is. Like look at the other guys on the wire and be like, do I still feel comfortable? Right. George Springer is like probably the best player in that scenario that it might be like, okay, I can see how you do that. But yeah, I'm going to talk about replacement level all season long. And if you want help on figuring that out, it's mostly like, hey, look at the guys that are on the waiver wire right now. Right. That's right. Like theoretically that's your replacement level. How much better are the guys on your team than those guys? Right. You're going to get to a point pretty quick in most 12 teamers that like, you know, probably most of your starters are a little better than that. But the replacement level starts kind of getting a little bit more, you get a little more tolerance there as more and more guys hit the IL and your replacement level, you know, basically that pool kind of gets a little bit worse throughout the season. So it's just something to keep an eye on, but always have an idea of what kind of player is always out there for me, right? What kind of player, like platoon power bats. Platoon power bats are always out there. The Gavin Sheets of the world will always be on the waiver wire in a 12-team league. You'll always be able to scoop one if you're a little short on power and Gavin Sheets is facing a couple of righties over the weekend. You'll always be able to scoop that up and try to get a home run or two out of him. That's always going to be there. Is there always going to be speed? I don't know, right? That depends on your league, but get an idea of what's kind of always on the wire and think of years past. If this is, you know, if you've been playing this league in multiple years, think of what kind of players are always kind of sitting on the wire and functionally that's your replacement level.
Let's skip from replacement level players and talk news and notes. We've got a couple of injuries, one of them more fantasy relevant than the other in this first week of baseball. Miami outfielder Chris Morel is headed to the IL with an oblique. The Marlins called up Davison De Los Santos, but then, of course, they immediately sent him back down. So no real exciting prospects to talk about with this transaction, but it does clear up the logjam in the Miami outfield a little bit for the next couple weeks.
Yeah, and this team is still going to platoon quite a bit. This, you know, they've got a couple guys that are mildly interesting, like when they play, like Owen Casey. Still interested in Connor Norby to an extent. You know, Liam Hicks is hitting right now, which is fine, I guess, in very deep leagues. Heriberto Hernandez is out there. He's mildly interesting, but these are all deep league streamers for the most part. Like Owen Casey might be a 12-team streamer if you're really just kind of looking for someone right now because you had to send someone to the IL, but that's about it.
And we'll move on to Milwaukee, where Andrew Vaughn suffered a fractured hamate bone. We love those hamate bones this year, Scott. I'm not sure what the deal is with those, but they keep breaking. So Milwaukee has turned to Jake Bowers at first base, and then a familiar face also taking some platoon at bats at first base, Gary Sanchez. The Brewers called up top 100 prospect Jefferson Caro and then sent him back down immediately. So again, no shiny objects in Milwaukee, but Bowers and Sanchez platooning at first base.
Yeah, which is, I mean, meh. I'm not that interested in a 12-team league in either of them. Maybe as a streamer against the right competition, both of them, of course, have massive contact issues. But they're also both really streaky, right? So both of them have been known to go on like 2 or 3 weeks where they look like they're interesting, and then you got to cut bait immediately because then they'll go back to being the pumpkin that they are. That's, you know, but again, right now, when one of these guys plays, the Brewers are hitting them fourth. behind Terang, Contreras, and Yelich. So like that's certainly streamable, right? I'm not going to sit here and say like you have to absolutely ignore it, but especially against right-handed pitching, you know, it can be streamed. Jake Bowers can hit a couple home runs. He can steal a couple bases. He's on 2 stolen bases already on the season. He stole one tonight on Tuesday. He's got 1 home run already. That's cool. Like while he's hitting fourth, while he's facing righties, he's totally streamable, right? But this is not a long-term asset for you. Gary Sanchez, even less so. Again, he's another guy who, if you need someone when he's in the lineup and he's hitting fourth, sure, right? It's a nice opportunity. The fantasy football equivalent would be like, hey, this backup running back isn't that good, but he's starting this week, right? So yeah, sure. Once he's not doing that anymore, you let him go. So Bowers and Sanchez are unlikely to hold this role for very long in the season. This lineup is actually incredibly thin. I'm not entirely sure how it's going to work. It looks deeper than it is right now because guys like Joey Ortiz are hitting off the bat. David Hamilton stealing bases, which is nice. But there's not a lot of hitting outside the top three guys here. So I'm interested to see how this team stays competitive with a lot of missing firepower, especially in Andrew Vaughn and Jackson Chourio, who are going to be out for a little bit. Expect Vaughn to miss about a month and a half.
We'll pivot to Seattle, where the Mariners have signed shortstop prospect Colt Emerson to a long-term deal. One of the most touted prospects in the Seattle farm system. Does that mean we see him in the major leagues soon? And if we do, what are the potential repercussions in Seattle?
Yeah, so generally when these guys sign a contract, it's to get them up in the majors. There's no need to hold them down now, right? Unless it's purely for development purposes, in which case you probably weren't signing them to an 8-year extension anyway. So I do expect him to come up pretty soon. I think that'll probably knock, in the short term, Leo Rivas out of the starting lineup. And then you'll put in Emerson. And that'll work for about a month. And then you're going to see J.P. Crawford come back. And when he comes back, he's a solid defender. He's been part of this team for quite a while. You'll see J.P. Crawford get in the lineup. And then there's going to be some question of how do they play this out between the DH spot, second base, maybe third base, and maybe corner outfield. You can kind of shuffle all these around thanks to Brendan Donovan's flexibility. So you can there's a couple of starting spots, but it'll be interesting to see how they keep it moving around. Cole Young is the guy who could lose space, right? If he's not performing, he's not at all a plus fielder. He's not someone that they, they have him to hit, right? So he's going to need to get off to a hot start. He has to an extent. He's also struck out quite a bit. He's had some batted ball luck. Cole Young needs to kind of stable this out over the next, 2 weeks and stay hot, or we might see him go back down.
Well, that's all we have for news and notes this week. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some guys who are off to great starts, some guys who are off to not so great starts, and whether those things are actionable or not after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with Scott Chu. We're talking hitters on pitcher list. Scott, we've got baseball to talk about. There's been 4 or 5 games for each team, 10 to 20 plate appearances for full-time guys, and we've got some hot hitters to start the season. And, we named this episode Chasing Production because Chase DeLauter, good grief. What a series in Seattle, for the Cleveland Guardians. I guess he's still considered a rookie. He, oft injured the past couple of seasons. I think he still has rookie eligibility, but he has, come out hot. What have you seen from DeLauter and is it sustainable?
Yeah, so DeLauter made his debut in the playoffs last year, which is really interesting because the Guardians are just dying for offensive firepower. And it sure looks like they've got some of that in Chase DeLauter. So with DeLauter, a couple things. The first thing you need to know is his history. And it's one that is riddled with injuries. The most games he's ever played in a major league or in a professional season across all levels of the majors is 57. All right. In 2025, he played 42 total games, period. 39 in 2024, 57 in 2023. So, and those were full seasons for him, right? There was opportunities to play over 100 games in those seasons, and he played about half. It's really bad. The injury history is horrid. And it's not like a one recurring injury kind of thing. It's all over his body. It's ankles, it's arms, it's all kinds of things. So you've all probably already run your first fabs and you've already made your first bids. And that was why I was telling people, don't throw it all in on DeLauder. As much as we like him as a prospect, he's a top 25-ish overall prospect. He's got a lot of tools. He's not fast, but lots of power, plenty of hit tool. I think this guy, he's got all this talent and it breaks all the time. Like the difference between him and Royce Lewis is like Royce Lewis, it was always his knees. Like his knees just kept falling apart and they still do. Whereas with DeLauder, you see it sort of all over. But that's the biggest concern I have. Now, coming out the gate, he had those four home runs and you might be looking at that plate discipline and being really, really scared. It's a 4.5% walk rate, 31.8% strikeout rate. That's going to level out. He was never this way in the minor leagues. He never had strikeout rates over 16% in any full season in the minors. He always brought it down to like 15 point something percent with a very, very similar walk rate. He's a very disciplined hitter. I mean, when you start out and you hit four home runs on batted balls, you're going to swing a little extra, right? That's okay. That's fine. He'll get that cleaned up. I'm not that worried about it. We'll see where the walk rate lands, but you know, otherwise, yeah, he should be fine there. I think that if he plays as much as he probably should, you're looking at a 20 home run hitter and a guy who could probably hit 260, maybe 25 home runs with the head start he's got now, but he's a guy who you should be very excited about. Your biggest number one concern more than anything else is that he doesn't stay on the field. With the other, and again, one of the things that makes him interesting and the reason we're going to talk about him more than some of the other guys is that he's new, right? We don't have a whole bunch of major league data to go on. That's the same for like Munetaka Murakami, right? With Murakami, we don't have all of this major league data. We just had some ideas of what might happen. And what we're seeing happen is exactly what we thought would happen, right? He's hit three home runs already. He's struck out a bunch of times and he's walked a bunch of times. That's what Murakami's going to be. He's a three true outcomes guy, walk, strikeout, home run. The batting average is certainly going to plummet, but the power is very real. Just with DeLauder, we saw his max, like his EV actually has been 96, like every single game, everything DeLauder hits is a hard hit ball. That's not really the case with Murakami. He's got home run power because he can get the ball in the air down the pole field. What he doesn't do is like constantly hit the ball hard. That's just not what he does. You can see that in his exit velocities. His hard hit rate is good. He's barreled things up, but like when he misses, it's really, really bad. It's like pop outs and stuff. So, he's a guy who, again, he's going to hit these home runs. His batting average is probably going to be like, I think the projections are right here that it's going to be like 230. Maybe worse, right? Some projection systems had it all the way down to like 206, right? That's plausible for Murakami, but he'll also hit like 30 to 35 home runs. That's just the type of guy he is, right? And he'll walk plenty. The OBP will be very serviceable, right? Probably 330, 340, something like that. So with Murakami, what you're seeing is exactly what we thought we would get. It's not more or less exciting. This is what he looks like when he's hot. A bunch of strikeouts, a bunch of walks, and a bunch of home runs. And when he's cold, it's fewer walks, fewer home runs, more strikeouts. That's just the way he's going to be. So it's nice to see him fit the narrative that we expected so far, obviously in such a small period of time. But this is exactly what a hot Murakami should look like. Nothing surprising here.
Yeah, one of Murakami's first interviews after signing with the White Sox in the Chicago locker room was he was asked the question, what do you bring? What are you planning to bring to the Chicago White Sox? And obviously, having just arrived in the U.S., his English was very limited, so he was using a translator. But he skipped the translator for this answer because he just says, "I have power." And I was like, "Yeah, okay, big guy. Like, we got you."
He also brought bidets to the White Sox locker room, so he got bidets all over there. And so I'm sure, if you've ever met anyone with a bidet, you know what all these guys are talking about now. They're talking about their electronic, heated water bidets. constantly. That's just the way it works when someone gets one of those. But you know, those guys, you know, so those guys are new, and that's where it's interesting to be like, okay, let's see what a hot version of them looks like. Whereas, you know, some other guys that have been around for a while, they're doing some stuff that I think is very interesting, like Mike Trout and Lewis Robert Jr. So Mike Trout, old guy, what we had hoped for Mike Trout was that he wouldn't look like the guy we saw last year, right? So with Mike Trout last season, what we saw was the strikeouts go to a new high. He struck out over 30% of the time. He still hit 26 home runs and he stayed healthy, which was a really big deal, but it was not all that useful of a player because it was really, you know, it was really streaky. It was like kind of home run only. The ratios completely fell off the table, which they've done for 2 years now, mostly because he hits a lot of balls in the air. What we've seen so far from Mike Trout is a couple of home runs. We've seen a ton of walks. We've seen the strikeout rate that looks okay for now. Again, when you're talking about strikeout rate, is one of the first stats that's going to stabilize for us, but that's at around 50 plate appearances. We're only about halfway there. So if you see weird numbers, that's going to just happen right now. If you set a rolling chart to only be for like five games, it just looks like zigzags up and down. It looks insane. And that's because that's not a very good sample size to use. What's nice to see from Trout is he's already halfway to his stolen base total from last year. He's already got one, which is nice. Again, taking a bunch of walks is nice. Even today, it's two more walks, no strikeouts. And second stolen base. He's got two stolen bases now. He's matched his total from last year here, six games into the season. So it's nice to see him. Obviously, he must be feeling a little healthier if he's running like that. Maybe they're not protecting him quite so much. I mean, the guy's 34. What are you protecting him for at this point? But what he's doing is kind of like what we'd hope to see. And if he keeps the strikeout rate at 25% or better, then this could be a really nice comeback season for Mike Trout, where he hits like 30 home runs, but also hits like 240, 250, which doesn't just kill you on the ratio side. So that's what I'm looking for him. With Lewis Robert Jr., I mean, he had an amazing first series of the year. Just the way he worked at bats, the kind of thing that you'd never saw him do in a White Sox uniform, because the White Sox kind of just don't believe in that, right? So, you know, even today, it's yet another walk. He's got more walks than strikeouts for five games. Like, that's a small, almost meaningless sample, unless your name is Lewis Robert Jr. That's insane. Like, that's just not the way that he was. He still hasn't stolen a base yet, which you were kind of hoping he'd do a bit more of, but that's one of the big changes going from team to team. New manager means different stolen base things. And he's hitting fourth and fifth. That's probably the biggest surprise to me of all of it, because I thought he was going to get buried somewhere down in like the bottom, like, you know, bottom third of the lineup or so, like maybe sixth or probably seventh or eighth. Maybe he'd run a little down there, but, you know, they were going to kind of just see what they have. Because he looks so strong, it looks like they've been willing to bat him fourth and fifth for the Mets. That's a big deal. That could really help him get to a new, I think he's well on his way. Obviously, again, it's very early. This kind of lineup spot helps him break his personal RBI record, which he sent back in 2023 of 80. He's actually never had more than 80 RBI in a single season. A lot of that's because he's been hurt a lot. He's only played one season with more than 110 games. But Lewis Robert Jr., working at bats, so far the strikeouts are down. That doesn't mean they'll stay down forever, but it sure looks like maybe he can have yet another season with a strikeout rate better than 30%. And maybe the Mets will help him find just a little bit more consistency. It may come at the cost of some stolen bases, because the Mets aren't quite as aggressive as a bad losing team like the White Sox, who only had one hitter, were. But I think that's a fine trade-off. Again, I don't expect the batting average to be good necessarily, but I think it can be. For a guy athletic as him, as fast as him, he should certainly hit better than the 224 and 223 he's had for the last two seasons. I think he can hit 240 or 250. And doing that in this lineup, batting fourth or fifth, I think you're going to end up with a great value compared to where you got him on the draft. So he's a guy that I don't want to say I'm a buy, because this is a terrible time to buy. Because everyone's basically looking at the same things we're looking at. Wow, this could really be his year. So I'm not saying buy. I am saying he's a strong hold, right? I also like, I'm not really interested in trading him right now, unless it's for like a a price that I know is too much. If I'm asking like, is this the right trade for Lewis Robert Jr.? It means it's not the right trade. Right now I want too much.
Before we move on, a real quick question about Lewis Robert Jr. At this point of the season, would you rather, if you're holding both, or if you had the choice to hold both, are you holding Lewis Robert Jr. or O'Neal Cruz?
Oh man. So O'Neal Cruz just today hit a cruise missile, right? 111 mile an hour. Oh, he's got two of them? Too sick. God, love that guy. He's so fun. Even though, I mean, God, if you watched on opening day, you know, he's still a project. All right. O'Neal Cruz, still a project at 27 and a half years old. I worry a little bit about the fact that he may be platooning. Hitting two home runs today certainly helps a lot. Only one strikeout today. The strikeout rate has looked really ugly early. I'd like to see him take some more walks. In terms of overall value, I probably believe in Lewis Robert Jr. right now more than I do O'Neal Cruz, even though I rank Cruz higher but that's probably going to get a lot closer. Like, I think those two guys are going to be ranked a lot closer than I had them coming in. But they could have very similar lines at the end of the season. And if one of them was going to hit 30 home runs, it'd be O'Neal Cruz, not Lewis Robert Jr. So, you know, I'm going to change my mind. I do still want O'Neal Cruz right now. I could see this being a tie by the end of the month or earlier. Like, and also because O'Neal Cruz has been healthier. That's the thing that I just thought of that kind of made it go back. Lewis Robert Jr. might be as good as he's ever been, but if he's only doing it for 110 games, I'd rather see what I can get right now from O'Neal Cruz, who I'm pretty sure is going to play 140.
Real quick, jumping back to Mike Trout. Trout has the opportunity to do maybe the coolest thing in baseball history. He's already the youngest player to ever go 30-30, doing it in 2012 at the age of 20. He's in his age 35 season. If he goes 30-30 this year, he'll be the oldest player to ever go 30-30. So to be the youngest and the oldest in MLB history to have a 30-30 season would be maybe the coolest stat in MLB history ever.
And also, if you add up all of his stolen bases from 2020 or from 2019 onward, I'm not sure you get to 30. For all of those seasons combined. Granted, some of those seasons were very short. That would be really cool. I don't think he ever does it. In fact, he only ever actually did the 30-30 thing once. One time. He fell just short a couple of times. He had 29 home runs and 30 stolen bases in 2016, 39 in 24 in 2018. So he's probably not going to do that. But I do think he could be as good as he was for smaller samples in like 2022 and or 2023, 2024, we could see that kind of guy. 2022 was the 40 home run season. I'm not sure he's quite there, but certainly like a 30 home run season with 75 RBI, missed games, obviously a really good OBP. I think he could certainly be that.
Well, let's move on to maybe some things that we've seen that haven't been great offensively. And most of these are coming from West Coast teams. Heading into Tuesday night's action, the Athletics offense has looked abysmal for anybody not named Shea Langeliers. They're averaging almost 15 strikeouts per game. Are you concerned about anybody like Nick Kurtz, Brent Rooker, Jacob Wilson, all of whom were struggling entering Tuesday night?
So guys like Kurtz and Rooker, this is what they look like when they're not doing great. This is normal. I mean, this is normal. A bad series or two from them looks like a bunch of strikeouts and maybe a few walks, right? They're big power hitters with contact issues. This is like Nick Kurtz. I think it's weird he's been leading off. They may switch that around. The only problem is the other guy who makes the most sense to lead off is Jacob Wilson, who's also slumping. So with like Kurtz and Rooker and to a slightly lesser extent Stotterstrom, this is just what those, like, they're all three of them are prone to slumps. Certainly slumps that are only five or six games long. Like, that's super normal for them. When they're in those slumps, they tend to strike out a lot. That's super normal for them. Kevin Gausman is throwing nasty splitters. That strikes guys out. Like, nothing really concerning there. The guy I'm a little more concerned about is Jacob Wilson, because Jacob Wilson looked amazing when he first jumped out of the gate last season. And then after he went down to injury, when he came back, he just really wasn't quite the same. And in fact, he sort of hit a wall starting in June and just never really came back and looked good. I was really hoping that we could see him jump out the gate a little better. He struck out a bunch of times in that first series, which is really unusual for a guy like Jacob Wilson. This is a dude who runs like single digit strikeout rates. So again, for four or five games, it's nothing really to worry about. We've seen him have, you know, rolling strikeout rates that are a little worse than single digit before. But if he continues to strike out for another week or two, then Jacob Wilson will quickly probably fall out of my ranks, because if he's not putting a bunch of balls in play, he's completely worthless. He doesn't have a whole lot of power. He doesn't have a whole lot of speed. He needs to be putting a ton of balls in play and hitting 300 like he did last year to really have some kind of value. He's a Luis Arias type, And if he's not doing that, he's not really doing anything for you. So that's the guy that worries me a little. And when I say worry, I mean, I'm keeping my eye on that, right? I'm not cutting him yet. But I am keeping my eye on that. And if I'm in a shallower league, like a 12 teamer where I don't have like a middle infield position or something like that, when Cole Emerson comes up and he's playing every day, that might be a place where I make a switch. Cause Cole Emerson can kind of do what Jacob Wilson does, but he's better at all of it. Except for maybe the strikeouts. Cole Emerson might strike out a little bit more than Jacob Wilson, because Jacob Wilson just never strikes out. He expands the zone a ton, puts balls in play. But otherwise, you know, all the things I want a fantasy guy to do, I think Cole Emerson could do better. So that might be a swap I make here in a week or two, especially if we find out Emerson's going to play every day and Wilson's striking out.
A couple other West Coast offenses that have sputtered out of the gate, San Francisco Giants and San Diego Padres entering Tuesday night. Neither team had scored more than 3 runs in a game. Of course, I say that, and the Giants have already put up 3 runs in the first inning against the Padres. Talk to me about anything you've seen with those two offenses that might concern you, or if it's just one of those things where it's like slow start, nothing to worry about.
Willy Adames, Rafael Devers, Elliot Ramos, Matt Chapman. Those are just streaky dudes. They're streaky power hitting guys. You're going to hear me say that a lot these first couple of weeks. A slump to start the season is no different than a slump in May, as long as it looks like the kinds of slumps we're used to from these players. Willy Adames having a slow start. Tell me where you've heard that one before. Oh yeah. Pretty much every year, right? Like, I don't always believe in the narrative of slow starts, but to see him have a bad series, he's been a streaky hitter his whole career. Sometimes it's at the beginning. Sometimes it's in the middle. Doesn't really matter when it is. That's what he is. Rafael Devers probably had the worst start of anybody last season because he's a power hitter with, as we've talked about in the preseason, abysmal contact ability, right? He's got one of the worst zone contact rates in the majors. And the only reason we don't worry about it more is because he's shown us that he's one of the few guys that can survive that way. But Rafael Devers is a streaky guy. Sometimes he goes on these offers with strikeouts, and that's not really that big of a concern for me yet, because I've seen that before and I've seen him come out of it. I hope he does it faster than he did last time, which took darn near a whole month, but I'm not that worried about it yet. And then Elliot Ramos, I'm just glad he's still hitting in the top third of the lineup, right? He's hitting third right now. I'll take that. That's all I need to see right now. As long as these guys are still hitting at the top of the order, they're still kind of doing the things we expect them to do, just maybe not getting the results, that's fine. I think if there's anything in this lineup I'm curious about is it's if guys like Jung-Hoo Lee continue to slump, will he start ceding time to maybe like young power hitter Gerard Encarnacion? I should say he's not young anymore. He's actually older than Lee. He's 28, but we've been waiting for him to come out and hit a couple home runs. So let's see how that goes. The other thing to note is like they faced a lot of righties, and some teams have, I'm only bringing that up to say teams across the league have not played an equal number of righties and lefties, right? Some teams have played all righties and will play all righties for like the first 2 weeks of the season. Some teams will face lefties like every other day. So it's going to be a little bit before we have a good sense of these platoons, right? Because we're just not going to get a lot of opportunities to see that, except for like who's going to sit against righties. You can figure that out pretty quickly. But who's going to play against lefties? It's going to take us a couple weeks to really get a good feel for it. So that's something I am keeping my eye on in every lineup. What changes when the lefties come in? And of course, for the Giants, the only lefties they've seen were on opening day, right? And so sometimes opening day's roster can be a little bit different because like you're not going to sit a an established veteran on opening day, even if you intend for him to be a platoon guy, because, you know, respect and all that. So give it a little time before you really, you're going to have to give it a little time before you really know how these platoons will play out.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some more actionable observations across the league after this. Well, welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with Scott Chu. As always, we're talking hitters on pitcher lists, and one of the highlights of our hitter coverage every week is Scott's top 150 hitters list. That update is coming later this week. Scott will be updating his list for the first time in season. And Scott, we've talked a lot about how it's such a small sample size to begin the year. But there's going to be player movement in your list. So what are the factors that go into, your ranking adjustments at this point of the season?
Yeah. So the list is going to come out maybe Wednesday afternoon, possibly Thursday in the morning. And one of the reasons we moved this podcast is to be a little bit closer to when this thing's going to come out. So I can talk about it a little bit more and not be like, oh, I think this is what's going to happen, but let's see the next two or three games and how it plays out. So the biggest thing that is going to impact a player's ranking right now is opportunity, because coming into the season, all that was very hypothetical, right? We had, we had guesses on where guys might land in the lineup, and now we're actually seeing what it looks like on opening day. So to use an example that's near and dear to my heart would be guys like Colt Keith, who completely fell off the rankings because I didn't think he was going to play that much, especially with McGonagall making the team. And it looks like Colt Keith is going to play almost all the time against righties. And when he does, he's going to hit first or third, right? That is an opportunity I certainly did not think he was going to have. So that's going to give him a fighting chance to get into the back end of the list, right? Teammate Kevin McGonagall is playing, a lot. We knew he would. That's why he made the team. But I thought he might hit in the bottom half of the order. He's hitting second. He started out hitting sixth. We saw him make second in the lineup today. He does that again one more time. I'm going to be like, well, I better move him up, because he's the perfect skill set to bat first or second. It's exactly where I want him to be. That's how a guy like that can move up a little bit, right? Moving down are guys that are not playing as much as you'd hope, or maybe in a worse lineup position. Again, we don't get to see a ton of the platoons going on yet, because some teams just aren't facing a lot of, both kinds of pitching, but you can still kind of get a feel for it. You're really looking for guys like a guy who probably won't make the list yet, but is definitely going to be on my radar. Jake Cronenworth for the Padres leading off, right? Those are the kinds of pieces of information that I'm really chasing. I'm looking at these lineups and going, who's hitting where, and is that surprising? So for all three righties that the Padres have seen, Jake Cronenworth is the leadoff hitter. That is kind of interesting, right? Because previously he was, I assumed he'd just keep hitting 7, 8, 9 all season long. He's a very kind of mid hitter, as the kids would say. And that just wasn't very interesting. But leading off for the Padres and getting to hit right in front of Tatis and Machado and Merrill and Bogaerts, that matters. That's a big deal. That's what I want to see. So, he's one of the kinds of players that will move up and down. I don't know if he'd quite make the list, but he'll certainly move. Just kind of watching where all this goes. It's, I don't have to worry about moving Jack Caglione all that much yet, because he's played against all three righties so far. So that's a plus. Guys who, I was a little bit worried about Jeremy Pena's injury. We've seen him play every other day so far. He's going to be coming back. I don't have to worry about dropping him down. I think they're going to warm him right back up. Seeing how, Jose Altuve I already kind of knew about, but, so that's been good. Isak Paredes will certainly get a move up for now. He's played, five of the six games so far. That was my biggest concern for Isak Paredes. He can move up a little bit, seeing that, this team's going to find ways to get him in. That's a big deal. I know I keep saying it. Like Lewis Robert Jr., who we talked about earlier, he gets to move up because he's hitting right in the heart of this lineup. That's a big plus. Brett Batty has, he'll get to move up because he's played, five games so far. That's all again, those are the kinds of things I'm really looking for. Those are the kinds of things that matter the most. And, you know, the guys on the other end, I haven't seen a ton of them yet, but like as much as people wanted me to move up Dominic Canzone to start the year, it's clear he's not going to play against any lefties. Same for Luke Raley. Those are guys that you would think I'd be interested in moving in. I'm not. Those are exactly the guys I thought they were, right? They are guys who will only play against righties. And when they do, they've got a decent shot to hit a home run, maybe steal a base in Raley's case, whatever. Another player who might move down just a little bit is actually Randy Arozarena, who spent all last season as the leadoff guy for the Mariners. And now he's hit fifth every single day. And that's not a huge knock. Like, I'm not saying he's going to drop a whole bunch of points, but I sure liked him a lot better in that leadoff spot than I did hitting fifth, because it's a lot, it's more volume and it's a good way to score a whole bunch of runs. And runs is a very difficult thing to get off the wire, because guys who hit in the top part of the order generally don't make it to the wire, right? We draft most of them. So that one's, you know, that was a little bit, I'm a little bit concerned about, and that I'm keeping an eye on. What you're not hearing me talk about is performance. And that's because performance really isn't going to change much right now. Maybe in the last tier of the list, where a lot of those guys are like, hey, let's see what sticks, right? That, you know, that's when I'll be like, hey, you know what? Ryan O'Hearn was kind of on the bubble in the list. He's off to a hot start. He's hit first and fourth and all that stuff. Yeah, sure. Let's get Ryan O'Hearn on there, right? He's hot. He's gotten to play against both lefties the Pirates have seen. Let's go ahead and do that, right? Performance sort of matters for him, but also so does the fact that he's played against both lefties. But that's, I know I just keep repeating myself here, but it's really important to understand that I care a lot more about opportunity right now than I do performance, because these stats just aren't that useful of samples.
Is there anything that you have seen that might be stickier? Maybe, you know, I know
there's one stat is sticky at this point. It is bat speed. Bat speed gets sticky. I mean, you pretty much know a dude's bat speed in like one plate appearance, like maybe 5 to 10 pitches, because guys swing about as hard as they're going to swing right out the gate, right? There's not a ton of variance from swing to swing. Maybe a couple players will have this, but generally, like, either you have like quick hands and you're, you know, slower, like the Luis Arraez type, who, you know, is like patient and then doesn't really start swinging till the end. And so you don't get that full kinetic motion to get this big, hard swing. He's just a real quick, snappy kind of, it's not all, you know, he's got like a quick bat, but really he's got great hand eye coordination. He just gets there and he's not like pulling all the way through and getting the full amount of power. He's just like, this is now going to land behind the second baseman. Slap. That's what he's trying to do. And you figure that out about a guy really quickly. So I'm not just going to like quote a bunch of bat speeds, because the problem is that bat speed is less useful even than exit velocity. Because with exit velocity, I can combine it with launch angle and be like, okay, this is the direction. Bat speed is basically a power proxy, but it's a pure raw power proxy. It doesn't tell you how good that, like, it doesn't even tell you if the guy's hitting the ball, right? It just tells you that he's swinging the bat really hard, right? So you can't really use it without any context, because you can, like, O'Neill Cruz has amazing bat speed, and most of the time it's only hitting air, right? That's a problem. That bat speed is useless unless it's making contact, right? And that's where you start seeing with the exit velocities, because also exit velocities are going to matter how well you barrel up the ball. Swing the bat as hard as you want. If you're just hitting it right over the top, you just don't get a lot of speed on it, right? Or if all you're doing is hitting it under and popping it straight up, you don't get a lot of speed because that bat's not connecting with the ball all the way. So it's a useful stat in some sense, but not, it doesn't really tell us a whole lot besides like, well, a dude swings really hard, he could hit a lot of home runs. He also doesn't have to do that to hit home runs. Isak Paredes does not have a great bat speed, but because he pulls the ball right down the line, he doesn't need it. He's not trying to hit the ball 500 feet. He's trying to hit it like 310 or whatever it is to insert it right behind the wall there. So that's the stat that's sticky. I'm still mostly concerned about, are guys doing, you know, in their performance, are they doing what I expected them to do? And that's a great segue to talk about the guy who's going to be featured on this list. I just had the graphic. J.R. Kane's make up the graphic. He's been doing the graphic for several years now. They're beautiful graphics. And he's highlighting a dude who we all just love and who hit a home run today. That's Sal Stewart, baby. Sal Stewart is a guy. He's the feature. He's going to move up. Number one, he's played every single game, righties and lefties. They faced two lefties, three righties. He played against all of them. Number two, he's hit fourth every single time. He's not moving up and down the lineup. He's hitting fourth, right? Number two, he's got two home runs. His walk to strikeout ratio is only 2-1. It was even more than that coming in today. He struck out twice today with one walk. So he's got 6 walks to 3 strikeouts now on the season so far. So like, you know, Juan Soto, eat your heart out. So, you know, Sal Stewart right now is just setting the world on fire, which, you know, is it a victory lap? Sure. I will take a victory lap over 1 week. Because I've been really excited about this guy. If you listen to our previous episode, me and Nate both super in on Sal Stewart. I think we even put on YouTube just the Sal Stewart part, which is like 10 minutes of the show. but it's really good to see him in the middle of that lineup, doing the things we want him to do. And you know, walking a bunch, not striking out, hitting for power. It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. It's affirming that what we saw in those process plus numbers last year were pointing at something that could be real. So I think he's going to be an excellent value where we got him. I think now, you know, I know projections say like 20 home runs, but I also, they all only have him playing like 120 games. I think that's dead wrong. I think you're looking at a guy at 25, maybe even 30. If he catches a couple windy days at Great American Small Park with fantastic, you know, even if the walk rate doesn't stay that high, it was usually just like kind of in the regular double digits, like the low teens. Even if it's just like 10% walk rate, 20% strikeout rate, that's still a dude who can hit like 280. I think Sal Stewart could legit be like a 25 home run, 280 hitter with, you know, 80 to 90 RBI, depending on how good this Reds team can be. And that's, I mean, that's a huge value. If that was his projection, he would have been taken 4, 5, 6 rounds earlier than you got him. So Sal Stewart, baby, let's go.
One of the fun stats about Sal Stewart so far this season is that he has a max exit velocity of at least 104 in each of his games played so far this year. So he's making real hard contact. You talk about something that's sticky. The hard contact for Sal Stewart might stick.
Oh, I mean, he's a dog. What do you want him to do? Coming into today's game, it was 72.7% hard hit rate. But even in the 40 batted balls we saw last year, we saw an average exit velocity above 95 miles an hour. We saw a 17.5% barrel rate, 52.5% hard hit rate. Sal Stewart's doing the stuff that we're like, hey, we saw you do this before. Just show us again for a little bit. And he's doing that. That's what makes me so excited about Sal Stewart, combined with an opportunity that's even better than the one I thought he'd get. We're really kind of affirming the best case scenario for his playing time.
Well, I think that's a good place to wrap, Scott. Is there anything else you wanted to mention before we get out of here?
Yeah, I mean, I would be remiss to go this whole thing. I can't talk about every player who's having a great start to the season, but I do want to mention, you know, Brendan Donovan. We briefly chatted about him before. He's going to move up because he's leading off. However, the number one concern about Brendan Donovan remains exactly the same. It's that he gets hurt. His injury risk caps his upside, but nice to see what he's doing. You know, I think, you know, Andrés Giménez, I don't care about what he's doing. He bats low in the order. He's a little bit hot right now. That's cool. Willier Abreu, they face a lot of righties. This is what he looks like against righties. So that's sort of interesting. Jordan Walker, until I have a big enough sample to see ground ball rates, I just can't get that interested. I already knew this dude could hit the ball really hard. I already knew that about Jordan Walker. I knew that about him before he even got called up. And even right now, I'd love to tell you that we're seeing like this great, this great improvement. And, you know, yeah, he's got 50% fly balls right now, which is fantastic, but that's like barely any batted balls. I'm weeks away from really being able to believe that number because in a 5-game sample, I've seen Jordan Walker do this before. I've just never really seen him do it for a whole lot longer than this, right? So I do think you were totally fine to scoop him. I think the plate appearance stuff is nice considering how bad it was last season. I'm not ready. He's not going to be on the top 150 quite yet, though, because, again, I'm just really waiting for this guy to consistently hit the ball in the air. This is a great start to that. 50% fly ball rate is exactly how it would work for Jordan Walker. For Jordan Walker to have a breakout, it's having like a 45 to 50% fly ball rate. I'm using FanGraphs number because they break it into just three categories. It's a little easier for me conceptually, but increased fly balls, right? He needs like a considerable increase in fly balls. Until I see that for a little while longer, I can't say like, this is definitely the guy all season and start being like, these are trade targets for him. For now, he was a fine scoop off the wire and just kind of wait and see and keep rolling with the Heat. That's fine. He did go 0-for-4 with two strikeouts today, but you know, that's okay. So he was a guy that was a little bit interesting. And then finally, there's JJ Weatherholt, who I like quite a bit. He's already on the list. He'll continue to stay on there. And that's just because, you know, he's doing exactly what we hoped, which is batting leadoff for the Cardinals and being just a really pesky hitter, right? He's not striking. I mean, he struck out twice today, but even then with those two strikeouts, it's only a 13% strikeout rate on the season. I don't think he has huge power. I talked about this previous episode. I don't think he has huge speed. He's got one home run, one RBI so far, one home run, one stolen base so far, but he looks like a pesky hitter that's going to drive pitchers nuts. And that's exactly what we wanted to see coming out of the gate.
Beautiful. Scott, remind the people where they can find you, where they can find your work.
Yeah. At If The Chew Fits on Twitter, scottchew.pitcherlist.com over on Blue Sky. The hitter list is going to come out sometime on Wednesday or Thursday, just whenever my life is just a little less crazy so I can put the finishing touches on that and move it. So that will be coming out, not by the time you're listening to this probably, but sometime Wednesday afternoon or Thursday, first half of the day. That's when you'll see it. That's the main thing I'm doing besides this podcast, but please check that out. I'm not going to be covering every single hitter anymore like I do in the preseason stuff, but I'll have plenty of notes about hitters who are definitely the guys that are moving around, or maybe, and sometimes notes about why I didn't move a guy, even though he's off to a really hot or really cold start.
Excellent. My name is Brett Ford. You can find me at Fade That Man on Twitter. Under rostered players in points leagues column on Mondays or Tuesdays early in the week. Provide some actual content for points leagues. And then, of course, here on Hacks and Jacks, as well as the QB List podcast network, streaming with my buddy Jay Felicio on a weekly basis over there. Make sure to catch us in the Pitcher List Discord. But other than that, Scott, be good, watch some baseball, and have a wonderful week. Have a wonderful Easter that's coming this weekend. We'll see y'all later.